Congressman, how are you?
Well, I'm doing real well, but you mentioned that punch key, and now I'm kind of missing what I would normally get in Michigan. You get the best ones. Used to have them shipped in from Hamtramck. They were great.
I tell you what, there's some good places here in Lansing, too, Congressman. Yeah. I guess we could go all over the state and find a good punch key.
You really could. I grew up on in the south side of Chicago in a Polish ghetto, and punch keys have been part of this Swede's life for many years.
Where are you this morning?
I'm on 295 North heading toward Baltimore for a field hearing today on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, their ELISIS committee. We're looking at the issue of foreclosures this morning. It'll be up at the University of Maryland Law School for that field hearing.
Tell me, that's a grave concern for many folks, especially in the real estate industry here. It's still a big problem. What do you hope to learn, and what can you do to help this problem?
Well, we'd like to find out why the government, when they had the program, well, it's still in place to bail people out of the foreclosures to give them relief. It's only resulted in about 44 foreclosure dealings right now at a cost of over $1 million and a lot of money still left unused at this point in time. It was a concern when I was watching it from the outside that it was another program that really took the market forces, put what's been called the moral hazard of too big to fail in the sense of contracts, and put the government involved with it in between, telling the private sector what to do in situations that were just really beyond their control. And now we're finding out that it didn't work, and the taxpayers been on the hook for millions of dollars that haven't provided relief as intended for people in underwater situations. So I want to hear the response from the regulators, the bureaucrats, response with that problem, and why it has been so slow to deal with it.
You know, Congressman, we hear constantly from people that government is too involved in our day-to-day lives. When you look at this situation with real estate, many people got into situations that they couldn't afford, and now they're paying for it. What can the government do in those instances?
Well, Tony, you're absolutely right. People got into situations they should have never been in, but the government was, in fact, requiring lending institutions to encourage people who really shouldn't have been in a mortgage situation with a home, should have still been renting, should have been building up their capital, should have been encouraged to experience the American dream, but do it the normal way, and that's by the process of little by little growing your ability to purchase a house. And then at the right time, with a down payment that was necessary to get in a situation that reasonably you could be expected to keep up with. We didn't do that, or I should say the government didn't do that. And the push was there for the Community Reinvestment Act to say basically everybody had a right to a house whether they could afford it or not. And now we put people in situations because of the push that's untenable. So what do we do? Well, I think the most important thing, Tony, that we can do is build an economy. Build the opportunity for people to have jobs where they can start all over in certain cases, build again toward that American dream that has some stability to it, because now they have the money in the bank, they have the assets that they've developed, they've done it over a slow period of time, and have been given requirements that are reasonable in nature, that says if you get in this house, we expect you to be able to pay it. We determine that by the basis that you have a job, that you have some savings, that you've got a down payment. Things that you and I did when we bought our houses, I'm sure. I know I put 20% down and had to fight to do that. But I'm glad that at this point in time that I own a house that I paid for over the course of years.
Congressman, I wanted to get your take on the passage of the two-week budget extension in looking how the fight is going on for the budget. As you know, a lot of people in state races as well as national races lost their jobs because the general public felt that we weren't doing enough, or I should say that folks like you, even though you weren't in office at the time, weren't doing enough to really take care of this budget situation and to create more jobs. And in seeing the budget proposal from the president and what some Democrats and Republicans are supporting, it still seems to me that enough isn't being done to lower the budget deficit.
You're absolutely right. And the American public deserves to know that this is going to be a challenge. When you have a $14 trillion debt and you have a president that offers, even when he says we've got to reduce spending, and he offers a $1.6 trillion deficit budget for 2012, that's a problem. I think the Republicans in the House are going to have to continue to force the hand on the continuing resolution, which, as your listeners have probably heard and concluded by now, is not a budget. It's based upon the fact that the Congress didn't put through a budget last cycle. And they just put a continuing resolution, and we're completing that the last 7 months. And so that's been the effort to not only put a continuing resolution in place to give us that period of time leading up to the budget that we are going to introduce very shortly here, that will be a budget that cuts spending, that doesn't continue deficit increases. But in the meantime, we have to put the feet to the fire to the Democrat Senate and say, listen, we sent you a continuing resolution. Yeah, it had $100 billion of cuts that you didn't want to have. But it's the right thing to do. It was a promise that the Republican minority made last year that they would put through $100 billion of cuts beyond the president's budget. We've done that. They didn't accept it, so we said, okay, we'll give you another shot at it. But this time it's only going to be a two-week shot, and that will put in place the $100 billion of cuts prorated for just 2 weeks. This is all a battle, Tony, to say we are broke. We have gone beyond broke. We have spent into oblivion. The only way to go back the right direction and produce an economy that produces jobs is to reduce government spending. That's going to require not only cutting in discretionary, but it's going to look at the waste, fraud, and abuse in some of the entitlement programs and cutting there as well, which includes Social Security, which includes Medicare, Medicaid, and all of the above.
Congressman, we're talking with Congressman Tim Walberg on the Tony Connolly Morning Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com. Recently received an email from a retired person who said she wouldn't mind paying taxes on her pension because she thinks that's fair. And I recently had a conversation with a very wealthy business owner who owns businesses all over the state of Michigan. And he said, you know what? If I need to pay a little bit more, then I need to do that. It's the right thing to do. And if it's going to help us get in better position, that's what we need to do. Do you think we need to increase taxes in some areas to help lower the budget challenges that we have?
No, I'm not willing to say we need to increase taxes until we're willing to say we're going to cut significant spending from government. We're going to reduce the size, scope, and cost of government. We're going to downsize government. Until we do that, there's no reason to contemplate a tax increase because, as you and I both know, we give the government more money. It doesn't increase their resolve and discipline. It enables them to be further undisciplined and spend that money. Back in the early 90s, we undertook a turnaround of the state of Michigan when I was in the state legislature. And there was a lot of screaming that went on, especially from the public sector, that we're going to destroy government by reducing the size of government, that we're going to leave people on the streets by cutting taxes as opposed to increasing them. We did just that. We cut taxes 26 times. We reduced the scope and size of government. We put whole departments together, and we ultimately saw a turnaround of the state where the economy rebounded. The revenue increased the state because people had their own money that they were saving, investing, and spending as a result of having jobs and a growing economy. The businesses were adding to their workforce, and we saw the state turn around and end up with a budget surplus. Is it going to be as easy as the early 90s now? No. We don't have the manufacturing base anymore. But to say we've got to increase taxes before we actually show people legitimate cuts, especially here at the federal level, I think it's the wrong way to go.
So what you're saying is if we make all the necessary cuts and cut things to the bone and we're still not where we are, we will have to look at the possibility of tax increases.
Well, I'm always willing to look at what's needed to get us back on track, but government is too undisciplined to talk about tax increases first. I think the majority of people would say, that rich, wealthy person you were talking to has a different framework there to increase their taxes a bit. Though I think it's unjustified, doesn't hurt them as much as the vanishing middle class that I'm trying to save by increasing an economy, giving opportunity for jobs and the security of those jobs, and then have people have their own resources to save, to invest, to spend, to make their life.
If I was to play devil's advocate, there's that argument out there that, oh, those Republicans, they're going to leave the poor people high and dry, cut all the programs that support the children and the hungry and the poor and the elderly. How would you respond to that?
Well, that would be absolutely false, because right now with the policies that are in place of this present administration, we're seeing the abolition of the middle class. We're seeing increase of the poverty-based and the poor, and less and less taxpayer-based to fund those programs. We've got to build the economy and build jobs so we can support the truly needy who can't do for themselves, don't have opportunity, are disabled or whatever. But we have to then encourage people who are able-bodied, capable of a job, maybe not the job they want right now, but a job nonetheless, to pick up themselves by their own bootstraps, as it were, and move forward. Then we'll have a flourishing middle class that has opportunity of moving and advancing beyond that. And that's what the American dream is all about. That's what you go to work every day for, Tony, and talk with people about, and that's what I'm going to work for today as well.
There was a bill that would cut funding for many Michigan Works projects throughout the state of Michigan. How did you vote on that bill?
That was a CR, continuing resolution, a resolution bill, which had a $100 billion cut across the board. It included the 47 duplicative job and work training programs across the United States. Michigan Works was included in that, a set of 47 different work or separate work and job training programs. It was a 15% cut, as I understand it, from Michigan Works to their budget of $21 million that produced last year 1,329 jobs, with 130,000 people, according to them, coming through their doors. If you look at those figures, Tony, you have to include that cost out at about $17,000 per job, those 1,329 jobs, which also in relationship to the 130,000 people who came through the doors, it means that if you look at it that way, it was a 99% failure rate. So I think we need to look at the outcomes of these job-providing programs, not to say we need to do away with it, but as I talked with a Michigan Works leader yesterday, I said, hey, it means not doing away with Michigan Works, but it means it takes a cut of 15% to your budget. You have to find a way of doing more with less or reducing the numbers that you deal with, but realizing that taxpayers can only support so much, and there are plenty of businesses that have taken 15, 20, 30, 40% cuts in their bottom line in order to survive, and government has to do the same.
Congressman, what's the latest from your perspective on the Asian carp story? There have been stories circulating that there are some efforts to still shut those locks in Chicago. We recently had a story where a man was convicted of trying to sneak Asian carp into Canada. Where do we stand on this, and where do you see it?
Well, it's been very frustrating because you have states like Illinois and Indiana with the mining, the steel mill industry that want to keep those locks open, and I understand that. But I also understand that if you let those Asian carp into the Great Lakes, we not only destroy a fishery, we also put severe hazards in place for recreational boaters, skiers, you name it. We have to deal with that. So the most recent thing that I've signed on with is a letter with from Congressman Dave Camp, the chairman of Ways and Means, a Michigan gander, who is asking the Army Corps of Engineers to do quick study and development of some alternative proposal that allows us to deal with those Asian carp to keep them from infiltrating into our Great Lakes system. This has to be done. It's not a minor project. And while we need to be concerned about the industry and manufacturing, mining, steel, all of that, we also need to be concerned about the greatest freshwater fishery and recreational habitat that the world knows, and that's the Great Lakes. So we'll continue battling there and trying to get the focus on dealing with the problem, whatever it takes, in order to get ahead.
We've got two more questions for Congressman Tim Walberg on the Tony Connolly Morning Show on 1320 WILS. Congressman, just wanted to get your take on the repeal of the 1099 requirement.
Well, I'm glad it happened. That's one thing that, you know, when Nancy Pelosi said last year, we have to pass the health care reform bill or Obamacare in order to know what's in it. That's been absolutely true. And very quickly, even the administration agreed with what we had been saying, that a 1099 requirement for small businesses to supply 1099s to any business they do $600 a business or more with was untenable. Huge, huge tax increase by simply doing that and requiring small businesses hand out. Well, just stop and think of the small businesses that would have to give to the gas stations they purchase fuel from for their operations that they've never had to do before. So once that became apparent, even the president understood that, and he's indicated he will sign that bill that was passed last week, and that's the first repeal of a portion of the Obamacare package that I'm glad to say happened.
Congressman, if we have plenty of gas reserves and gasoline is being refined at a normal rate and Libya isn't one of our principal suppliers for gasoline, why is the price of gasoline spiking so much? Are we being gouged again?
Well, I don't think we're being gouged except by the mere fact that we as a government are unwilling to do what's necessary to have an independent supply of our own resources for fuel and energy. All of the unrest, I just came back 2 weeks ago from the Middle East. I was in Israel, and not last Sunday, but the Sunday before, I was in the office with Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, and he expressed great concern, along with his love for America, that America was not doing what was necessary in its energy policy or lack of policy to remain independent from what he called the earthquake zone, which includes the whole Middle East and the uncertainty that's there. We have to put in place an all-of-the-above energy plan that uses our resources, whether it be lifting the moratorium, which ought to happen immediately, on drilling for oil in the Gulf, opening up the Anwar Reserve to drill for resources that will not hurt the environment in any way, shape, or form, using the Bakken Reserve out in the northwest of the United States, using the Marcellus Reserve that we found out in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, even in Ohio now, and doing the fracking for natural gas that we're capable of doing in an environmentally sound way. All of the above has to be involved, along with the alternative energy sources, with nuclear power, with clean coal technology. If we do that, Tony, they won't be able to gouge us, let alone keep the prices going up, because we will be independent and have plenty of resources to carry on ourselves and our energy needs.
All right, Congressman, I owe you about 10,000 cups of coffee because, once again, I went long. I appreciate your time so much. Thank you.
Well, I don't mind that, because this gives us a chance to talk to the people, and, boy, we have to stay in touch, because it's going to be quite a ride in order to get ourselves back to the American dream, but we can do it together.
We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.